Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
We're back. Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. Thank you for joining us. By the way, our feedback email address is ccrecap@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. Well, they're called massively open online courses, and they're offered by the country's top universities, Harvard, MIT. Even the University of Michigan has gotten into the game. So where is this trend leading? George Siemens is a MOOC pioneer. He teaches at Athabasca University, which is a publicly supported online Canadian university. Joins us now. George, thank you for coming on the program.
Thanks, James. Pleasure to chat.
So these courses, from what I know, some of them are offered for free. They're drawing well over 100,000 students. How exactly do they work, then?
Well, there are different models by different university systems, but generally what a university does is they take an existing course and they might tweak it a little bit, but transfer it to the online environment and basically make it available for anyone to join. All the ones that I'm familiar with are actually free, so you join without cost. And the format usually can be a combination of recorded videos and lectures. Some, such as Udacity and Coursera, have make greater use of sort of automated grading. But, and then to a certain degree, there's some level of social interaction as well. So you have a chance to interact with others on your, either on a website, a discussion forum, or on your blog. So some kind of a combination of activity that goes on in any online course, namely content provision, some interaction, some grading, and a few systems are starting to offer, I guess, what's called a badge or some indication that you've actually completed the course.
So if these are free courses, what is motivating major universities to begin to offer them?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's probably different by different systems. On the one hand, I think it's, well, because we can, that kind of a mindset. And it's similar to what happened in other areas of society. You know, the Internet happened to music, and it completely blew apart the album model. And the Internet happened to news and journalism, and that's completely altered what we expect from our newspapers or from our news sources. So I think this is just the natural progression of the Internet happening to stable institutions in society. And mm-hmm. at this point, the universities are kind of directly in the line of sight of these startups and entrepreneurs.
I mean, is the direction going to be at some point to begin making these profitable models where you're charging 100,000-plus students and making quite a lot of money for these courses?
Well, it's possible, and I guess that's where there's some ventures that are going with a public or a publicly funded or venture capital funding model, I should say. And more than likely, they're going to make some economic value point somewhere along the line. And for all we know, it might end up being that they serve as vetting for corporations or companies' best employees. And so in the end, student takes the course for free, but they essentially make the best students available to different companies who, in essence, fund that university model. You might have other universities such as, obviously, MIT and Harvard with their big edX announcement last week. They may well end up just using it as a way to recruit the best and the brightest students in the world. And for those that haven't completely been robbed of their idealism, some might actually say that that's the role of the university, is to educate society broadly, and mm-hmm. there's benefits that go well beyond the economic structure.
I'm talking to George Siemens. He is a pioneer of these massively open online courses. He teaches at Athabasca University. It's a publicly supported online Canadian university. You know, George, here in Michigan, there's a lot of controversy surrounding this expansion of cyber schools. They're schools for the K-12 system. Those who oppose this expansion say there is no clear evidence that they work, and there are concerns that they're simply not effective ways to teach. What are your thoughts about teaching online and through the cyber system?
Well, I've been involved in a variety of systems, including traditional medical research universities. It started off actually in a community college system, and now I'm with a system that's actually exclusively online, and we deliver the range from bachelor's through to master's to PhD programs in this format. So from my end, you have to keep in mind I'm a bit biased because I've been involved with these various systems that teach either online or blended formats for well over a decade. And I think to a degree the question around education, this will probably cause a few people a mild rash, but the question around education in terms of technology isn't really about effectiveness. because the way we move in society, I mean, it's the mode of business, it's the mode of government. So if people aren't comfortable in digital environments, essentially you're graduating people who, in their ability to participate in society, are functionally illiterate. So I think the value point for promoting the use of these cyber learning approaches really has to be, it's the way to prepare students for the society they're entering.
Well, now, would you say there are very clear drawbacks to online learning that when you compare it to classroom learning?
Actually, no. I would say that the research has demonstrated that there really isn't that much of a difference between the two different formats. There are certain things that online learning will do better than classroom learning, but there's things that classroom learning will do better than online learning obviously will. That's one of the reasons some university systems have moved toward a more blended model so they can take advantage of both. But the quality of the learning actually has more to do with the design of the learning experience and the type of learning activities that students engage in, as well as the motivation of the students, than a particular medium.
Two questions. One is, Sure. Do you think the K-12 system should be viewed differently than a higher education system when it comes to this kind of exclusive online learning?
Well, definitely. I mean, there are certain things you want to consider. You know, context is always critical anytime you're talking about learning, whether that's K-12, corporate learning, or the higher education market. By the same account, though, our, you know, children, and I certainly have kids as well, that are up to their eyeballs in the use of technology in a variety of different ways. So you may not want to move them 100% online, but you can certainly move segments or a good portion of that interaction online.
And you say that there are techniques with these online learning courses that are more effective than others. What are the most effective ways to teach online, and what would you say are clearly the ways that don't seem to work?
Well, the same things that work well in a classroom work well online. So if you have, let's say, an educator that is attentive to students and is interacting with them on a personal level, that's typically going to produce better educational outcomes than if you have students essentially driving their learning experience by themselves without any guidance or support. So that's probably one of the biggest factors. The use of multimedia or the use of multiple learning activities can also be a significant factor. So if you give students a chance to engage in learning that they can see the relevance of it, that they get motivated by, that sort of motivates them to practice creative approaches to how they interact with the content, that'll make a difference. If students have a chance to be social, whether it's in a classroom or an online setting, that's also going to make a big difference.
Do you really, as a professor, though, feel as connected to an online student as you do to a student that's in a classroom with you?
Actually, from my experience, I feel it can vary, because, again, it depends the opportunity that you have to interact with the students. You know, if you're dealing with a classroom in a university setting where you've got 300 or 500 or more students, you don't feel terribly connected to them. So I would say generally, in courses I've taught where I've interacted with students online for a period of time, I know them better for their ideas than I do in a classroom. And the reason is that the online environment requires you to contribute and interact, whereas in a university lecture, you may sit there for an entire semester and not say more than two words to a faculty member.
That makes sense. About a minute left, but give me your vision of the future of online learning. Do you expect it to expand exponentially? Could we see maybe even half of students in higher education learning online exclusively?
Well, we would definitely need to see the technology improve more so. Right now, it's still a fairly flat technology landscape. We're really just duplicating what we used to do in a classroom, and we're not taking advantage of, to a full degree, the different kinds of media or even new approaches to the teaching process as a whole. But I would say down the road, if the current stats, you know, Sloan C. and others have published on this, but if there's any indication, online learning is growing at a more rapid rate than what we're seeing with traditional university settings.
I think some virtual reality goggles would probably help, don't you think?
I've got mine on order.
Excellent. George Siemens, he is a MOOC pioneer, that's massively open online courses, has been working in these for quite a while. He teaches at the Athabasca University, publicly supported online Canadian university. George, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
James, it was a pleasure.
We're coming right back. I'm Michael, let's say James Cohen, is that going to work? This is 1320 WILS.